Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio S.I.S. Vishu, and as always, S.I. Prakash, the co-host of this program. And in the last few episodes, we are in the last chapter of Prema Vahini. And as the chapter nears completion, it's only getting interesting and even more enriching. Very beautiful concepts, very beautiful ideas. So we are in the 11th segment of chapter 30 today. One thing we noticed is while this text is there in the Hindi Telugu Prema Vahini, we could not find what we are discussing today and what we discussed in the last episode in the English version of Prema Vahini. So for some reason, there is a page missing in the English Prema Vahini. For those who are unaware, for every episode of Vahini Satsang, we always go back to the original Telugu of Bhagwan and we examine the translation. We, if needed, add a few lines or modify the translation, trying to be as true and as accurate to what Bhagwan has written in Telugu. So this is an exercise we do every week, and only after we are satisfied that everything that Bhagwan has written is conveyed comprehensively in the English, we record the Telugu and the English in different voices, and that is what we hear every time we start the program. So, moving on in the same tradition, let's listen to the 11th segment of chapter 30 and then we'll spend time on this beautiful satsang of Prema Vahini.
మంచి వైద్యము తెలిసిన డాక్టర్లు, ఆసుపత్రులు లేని దేశమునందలి ప్రజలు ఎంత రోగపీడితులై ఎంత బాధపడుదురో, సుజ్ఞానమును బోధించి పరమార్థ మార్గమును చూపునట్టి మహనీయులు పుణ్యక్షేత్రములు ఆశ్రమములు లేని ప్రదేశములందు కూడా అదేవిధంగా క్రూర గుణములు పెరిగి మహాదారుణ రోగములచే బాధపడుదురు. అయితే యథార్థమును తెలుసుకుని సర్వశాస్త్ర రహస్యముల సారమును తెలిసిన అనుష్ఠాన పరాయణులైన మహనీయులు ఉండిన ఇట్టి దారుణ గుణములు కలుగవు. కలిగినను అణగిపోవుచుండును. అసలు లోకమున అట్టి మహనీయుల మహాతపశ్శక్తి సాధనా బలము వల్లనే లోకము ఇంతవరకైనా శాంతించి సుఖపడుతున్నది. మహనీయులు వారికి వారు ఆనందమును అనుభవించుటే కాక అనుభవించిన ఆనందమును అందరికీ పంచిపెట్టవలెను. అయితే తనకు తాను అనుభవించకమునుపే, రుచి తెలియకమునుపే, తన బుద్ధి బలహీనత చేత పేరు ప్రతిష్టలకు ఆశపడి అధోగతి పాలగుచున్నారు. ఇదే ఇప్పటి పెద్దల దౌర్బల్యము. ఇప్పటి సాధువులు పెద్దలు ఆ యథార్థమును తెలుసుకుని మెలగకుండుటే నేటి క్షామమునకు కారణం. అట్టి పవిత్ర సారమును అనుభవించవలెను. తన స్వార్థత్వమును త్యజించవలెను. పరోపకారమునకు పాటుపడవలెను. లోకక్షేమమును ఆశించవలెను. ఇన్ని భావములు హృదయమున నింపుకుని పరమాత్ముని ధ్యానించవలెను. ఇది సరియైన దారి.
How the diseased would greatly suffer when there are no doctors or hospitals. Similarly, when there are no holy men and realized souls or sacred spiritual or pilgrim centers to teach people about the noble path and turn their minds Godward, wicked qualities increase, leading to grave illnesses and huge suffering. If there are people who are spiritually aware of the reality and are familiar with the essence of all the scriptures and also lead a principled life, then such abominable qualities will not take root, and even if they arise, they can be mitigated. If the world today has this level of peace and happiness, it is because of the spiritual power and penance of such good and godly men. Such noble men should not only be in bliss by themselves, but also endeavor to share this with everyone. Unfortunately, noble men of today are not endeavoring to experience this bliss. On the other hand, because of shallow discrimination, they're going after name and fame and ruining themselves. This is in fact the weakness of the present day elders. The current despicable situation is because of the elders of the time not realizing the reality. That holy essence has to be experienced and realized. One's selfish needs have to be sacrificed. There must be constant effort to do good to others. One should wish for the welfare of the world. With all these feelings filling the heart, one must meditate on the Lord. This is the right path.
So, that is segment 11 of chapter 30. And so here you have Bhagwan referring to the great need of holy men, of realized souls, of spiritual centers to turn people Godward. In fact, I was reading another discourse of Bhagwan where Swami is saying that we have so many rules and regulations which are prescribed in society, and generally all this code of conduct for humanity is laid down in the Shastras. So Swami says, Sasanam Vachanam Iti Shastram. So Shastras are called what they are because they have laid down the rules and regulations for the conduct of man in society.
Right.
And Swami says, suppose someone does an act of indiscipline, then you have prescribed norms of punishment and in some ways to correct the mistakes of the person. Somebody says, if a thief, for example, commits theft, and if the thief is caught by the police and put in jail, so what you can do is you can put his body in under lock and key in the jail, but nobody can imprison his mind.
Correct.
Somebody says, and His mind is free to roam, you know, he can be in the jail, but mentally he can be in his home, he can be in the market, he could be probably scheming one more theft and probably executed another theft in a much beautiful fashion, grander fashion. No one can stop that. And Swami says, an administrator can exercise control over only on the body of the subjects, but he has no control over the mind, and God alone can control the mind of individuals. So here Bhagavan is telling that it is so important for holy men, for godly men to be there in society, because it is only through them that people's mind can be turned Godward. And if that does not happen, Swami says, that is what is leading to grave illnesses and huge suffering.
So true. In fact, when I read this paragraph, I was just thinking of, people who have actually done this in their lives, and people of recent knowledge. And
yes.
Like if you think of great sages, Swami, of course, is Swami.
Yes.
But then you have people like Ramana Maharishi.
Yes.
You have people like Aurobindo.
Yes.
Then you have people like who have led this life.
I mean, who have led masses
towards, who have led masses towards that realization.
Mm.
And another person who really came to mind was Swami Bhakti Vedanta Prabhupada.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The founder of ISKCON.
ISKCON, yes.
The founder of ISKCON. It's very interesting. His life is very interesting because, you know, when I was reading some of the highlights of his life, he was a devout person right from beginning, and he had his family. He was named Abhay Charan at birth because he is fearless at the feet of the Lord. Abhay, he is not nearby. He is not having any fear at the feet of the Lord. And he was very devout, and he was very pious in his life. And he had a small business, and he's running his family in Allahabad and all that. But the calling was very strong. And then when he met his guru, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, one instruction which his guru gave him, he said, print books on spirituality and give it to people. This is the only instruction he gave him. Print books. And he said, if I had the money, I would have printed more books. He said, why? How the West is able to sustain their culture, how they are able to propagate their culture. That is because they are able to print it and distribute the books.
Mm-hmm.
And this was possibly in the early 1920s, 30s, when Bhagwan was just born.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know the exact years, but his guru has told him that is his mission. And even in his life, slowly he went from his grihastha ashrama, he went to vanaprastha, he gave up his family, this thing, and he was completely drawn towards this mission of, you know, actually printing. And so during the Indian independence, he started a booklet a couple of years before the independence, Back to Godhead. So that was like a magazine.
Uh-huh.
He would himself write articles. He had studied the Bhagavatam. He had studied the Bhagavad Gita. So he would write articles and he would bring it out as small booklets. Then even the printer said, sir, we cannot print without money. Mm-hmm. It was,
yes.
He didn't have an endless source of money. But whatever he could, you know, he started printing, he started doing, and in that process, you know, he was so involved and absorbed in this message of the Lord that he was doing this continuous sadhana. The interesting part of his life, when his guru came to his dream and indicated to him that now is the time for you to take sannyas,
uh-huh,
and go to the West,
okay,
and spread the word. And somehow, because of some mutual friend, something, somebody managed to send us a letter saying that we will take care of him. Like in the most, you know, very, very divinely orchestrated kind
manner.
Of events.
Sequence of events,
the way it happened. And finally, he was on the ship that went to the US. And in the ship, he got two heart attacks.
Oh my God.
Imagine at the age of 63 and 60, so by the time he started the ISKCON 69-70.
Oh, when he was 70, he started,
yes,
ISKCON. Wow.
Nearly 70, like 65, 66.
Mm-hmm.
At that age, and there is a beautiful poem he has written in which he says, I have nothing with me. I have nothing. I don't have money, I don't have age, I don't have beauty, I don't have knowledge, I don't have anything with me. All I have is the Lord's name. And it was very inspiring the way, you know, he went, and what a moment ISKCON is today.
Yes.
But that kind of dedication with which he went, and he had two heart attacks, and that is when in the ship he had the divine vision of Lord Krishna.
In a dream,
Lord Krishna is also going in the ship with giving him darshan of several avatars.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that vision, and he says because of that his life, he was saved. So when Swami says, you know, such sacred souls, realized souls, they should go and start revitalize these pilgrim centers and, you,
yes,
know, draw people and then inspire them. This Bhakti Vedanta Prabhupada's life came to mind.
Yes.
And the phenomenal sacrifice that he has done. At that age, going and standing alone on the streets of New York and singing, yes, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna.
Yes.
I mean, you really, Abhay, his
absolutely
name was Abhay, absolutely,
yes,
fearless.
Yes.
And he went and did it all alone.
Yes.
And then he started giving small talks, and then people started coming to him.
Mm.
And slowly, step by step by step by step, it has grown into what it is today.
Wow. And ISKCON temples are very beautiful places of worship.
Right.
Today. In fact, I mean, when you talk about this literary contribution to regenerate people's mind into the culture of India, into the culture of our spiritual heritage, what also comes to mind is Gita Press.
Right.
Yeoman contribution to enable people to go back to our roots.
Correct.
In fact, you know, even when we were learning Vedic mantrams in our school, we also always use their books, the Gita Press books, you know, be it Mantra Pushpam or any Vedic hymns, all the stotrams. And I think Chinmaya Mission, I think any Ram number
Krishna
of
mission.
Ramakrishna yes. Mission, yes. Any number of such. And but if you see, as Swami says, you have any number of doctors and hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
But these institutions, you know, there are very few. And there are very, very few people who are like that, who are, who have led such disciplined life and who have been able to inspire. But at the same time, Swami says the world is what it is today. If whatever peace and happiness that you're experiencing in the world today, it is because of the spiritual power and penance of such good and godly men.
Absolutely. In fact, so I remember one incident which the warden was telling us, sharing with us.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that once Swami had come to the Vrindavan hostel and the students had performed several small or one drama showing episodes from the lives of several saints in India.
Mm-hmm.
So you had certain episodes of Mirabai, Tukaram, Sakubai, etc., etc., and small episodes. And then Swami saw the entire drama. And when Swami came back to Thrai, back to the mandir, Swami asked the warden. Swami asked him, why are boys putting up such dramas?
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very unique, strange question. And he said, Swami, these are the greatest saints in India, saints of India. And they are all self-realized masters.
Mm.
They have got a sakshatkara. Swami said, "Acha, who told you?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Swami even contested the realization status that we have kind of given to a few people who were, you know. But the beautiful part of that entire conversation was, then the warden was totally shaken.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Swami, these are the greatest saints we have known.
Hmm.
And now you are saying that why are we following their lives? I have one question. Swami asked, okay, what is it? In today's day and age, in this Kali Yuga, is there at least one person?
Hmm.
Is there one person who is realized?
Hmm.
At least one person who has attained self-realization, Swami, I want to know. Then Swami looked at him and said, what do you think? Swami said, not one, sir. There are thousands and thousands and thousands.
Oh, wow.
There are thousands and thousands of self-realized masters. And Swami said, it's not easy to find them.
Hmm.
But it is because of their prayers
yes.
that I have come.
Wow.
It is because of their prayers and their dedication that I have come. I have taken this avatar because of their prayers.
Hmm. Wow.
And Swami also added the sentence that it is because of the presence of such people on earth, the sun is rising the next day.
Huh. Wow. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam adityavarnam tamasa parastat.
So he says that the sun is rising because of the presence of such yes. realized and noble
yes.
people.
Yes, yes. Wow. I mean, so you visualize that supreme being who is the effulgence of a billion suns mm-hmm. and who is beyond the darkness of ignorance. I mean, so once you are able to, Swami says, tame the mind, then you actually acquire vidya. Because which is vid means illumination. So what is vidya? Only that which grants you that illumination, and that illumination will happen, as Swami says, only from Adhyatmika Vidya, only when once you have learned to control the mind. And and Swami says that here you have to learn to meditate on the Lord. And Swami says, when the sages declared that they had seen God, what did they see him? You know, Swami says they saw him as the one beyond darkness.
Correct.
And what is this darkness? It is ignorance.
Ignorance.
And I said the sages saw him not in the physical and external world, but in the inner world, in the firmament of their inner being. And God shines beyond the darkness of ignorance in the inner self with all the effulgence. So, I mean, this whole process of tuning your mind towards the divine, following the dictates of the Shastras. All that is what is so important, and it can be done by people who have recognized the reality.
Exactly. It looks like here Swami is clearly giving three attributes to people who are, you know, eligible.
Yes.
To lead the masses.
Yes.
So to say. So if there are people who are spiritually aware of the reality,
yes.
That is the first
thing. Yes.
First eligibility factor.
Yes.
Spiritually aware of the reality. Here, you know, one thought which comes to mind is, Swami often says, see, in reality, it is only Advaitam. There
yes.
is no difference.
Absolutely.
There is only one. There is no Dvaitam at all.
Yes.
But, like Dr. John Hislop asked Swami, Swami, how do you live it? Swami said, Bhava Advaitam.
Yes. Bhava Advaitam, Kriya Advaitam, Padartha Advaitam.
So he said, Bhava Advaitam is possible, is practicable,
yes.
Is practically possible for everybody
yes.
to follow. In
yes.
Bhava, you are Advaitam. But as long as you're using the upadhis of the body and the mind
yes.
and you're in society and all that,
yes.
what he says is, you should follow the dharma of the society.
Yes.
Like he says, for example, you cannot say the person who is helping at your home
yes.
and your wife, both are one and the same.
Yes.
In essence, yes, both are one and the same. But will
yes.
you treat both of them in the same way? The lady who is helping to clean your house as a housemaid, she and your wife, both are Atma, both
yes.
are same. So he says, but there is a norms which society has given.
Yes.
There is certain understanding through which. So as long as
I mean, each one is doing their role.
Right.
But recognize that there is divine in everyone.
Correct.
Yes.
So here, this is a very interesting, spiritually aware of the reality. The second one is who is familiar with the essence of all the scriptures. And the third is who leads a principled life.
Yes.
So such a person who has these three eligibilities
yes.
alone can share this and inspire
yes.
millions.
So you should not only be aware, you also have to lead a principled life.
Correct.
Practice and preach and know and as well as practice.
Exactly.
Yes,
so
yeah.
if you first start with the first point.
Yeah.
Spiritually aware of the reality.
Yes.
So like, you know, we are discussing and Swami has told in so many discourses, that reality is Advaitam. There is only
yes.
one Brahman, Atma,
yes.
whatever, Brahma, Atma, God, anything you name, that is what it is.
Yes.
That is the reality. I was just going through this Atma Bodha by Shankaracharya.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful treatise on the Atma. And you cannot... Words cannot describe the Atman. Because Atman defines
yes.
everything. You cannot define the Atman.
Because Atma is beyond words.
It's beyond words and it defines everything.
Yes.
Everything in this creation
is defined
derives
by it, yes.
sustenance and existence.
Yes. yes.
Because of the presence of Atman.
Yes.
And you cannot describe Atman based on the things that you can perceive and see and feel and touch.
Yes.
So what they use these only as analogies.
Yes.
They use these as analogies. They say, like, just like the gold in the ornaments or like the wood in the trees. If you see the trees, you see them as trees. If you see them as wood, you see everything as the same wood. So these are all Upanishadic examples and analogies. This Atma Bodha is very, the first three shlokas that, where Shankaracharya speaks about, is somewhat similar to what Swami is saying.
Mm-hmm.
He says, who is eligible?
Hmm.
So he says, I am presenting this knowledge, self-knowledge of Atma Bodha for which kind of people? Who is eligible to get this knowledge of Atma Bodha? He says, those who are purified by austerities.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chitta Shuddhi which Swami
yes.
keeps talking about, Chitta Shuddhi is when the mind is calm,
yes.
when the mind is serene, when the mind is not perturbed. In fact, there is a beautiful quote by Ramana Maharishi where he says, the only thing that you need to do is to be calm.
Yes.
He says, the only spiritual life you need is not to react. Very beautiful it is.
Yes.
To be calm is the greatest asset in the world.
Yes.
It's the greatest siddhi, the greatest power you can have. If you can only learn to be calm, you will solve every problem. This is something you must remember. when you are perfectly calm, time stops.
Yes.
There is no time. Karma stops. Samskara stop. Everything becomes null and void. For when you are calm, you are one with the entire energy of the universe and everything will go well with you. To be calm means you are in control. You are not worried about the situation, the outcome. What is going to happen tomorrow? To be calm means everything is all right. There is nothing to worry about, nothing to fret over. This is also the meaning of the biblical saying, be still and know that I am God. To be calm is to be still. The only spiritual life you need is not to react.
Yes.
it's so yes. beautiful. So yes. he says to be calm. And here Shankaracharya says, purified by austerities. Means at the end of that purification, what it is, you have a chitta shuddhi, you have a calm mind. Peaceful in the heart. See, that's the next thing. Purified by austerities, peaceful in the heart and free from cravings and desires. Free from cravings and desirous of liberation.
Okay.
Only desire that a person should have is desire for liberation. Such a person is eligible to have this Atma, this self-knowledge, Atma Bodha. So that is his first shloka. Then the second shloka is very interesting. He says, just as the fire is the direct cause for cooking.
Yes.
So when you are cooking something, how can you cook anything without fire? Of course, today you have electric heater, but that is also a part, form of fire.
Fire, yeah.
So fire is the direct cause for cooking. So also, knowledge alone is the cause for liberation.
Yes.
He says, action cannot be the cause for liberation, and action cannot destroy ignorance. See, what is that knowledge? Lack of knowledge is ignorance.
Yes.
He says, action cannot destroy ignorance since it is not in conflict. See, you may be doing action incessantly, but still you may be ignorant.
Yes.
But knowledge alone destroys ignorance, just as light destroys darkness.
Yes, absolutely.
So he gives, these are the, qualities of a person who is ready to take the Atma Bodha. So he says this beautiful thing. He says the Atman, although it is pervading everything, is there everywhere, it is not shining bright in everything. It's not manifested in everything. It's manifested only in the buddhi, the intelligence. So here, you know, where Swami says, he says that discrimination.
Yeah, it's because of shallow discrimination. People are going
hand,
out of...
Because of shallow discrimination, they are going after name and fame and ruining themselves.
Yes.
So basically, when Adi Shankara is saying that the Atman is manifest only in the buddhi, in the intelligence, and the higher form of intelligence is discrimination. Like if that discrimination is clouded, if that discrimination is mobbed by ignorance, then such people are going behind name and fame.
Yes.
So he says, such people are not having the direct experience. And who is a person, like here Swami is saying, spiritually aware of the reality, and is familiar with essence of all the scriptures. So what is the essence of all the scriptures? If you have to look at it, like in the 1990 summer course series, very beautifully Swami has brought out the entire, you know, it's like step by step by step. Neti, 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 neti. I am not this, I am not this, I am not. I am not the body, I am not the senses, I am not the mind, I am not the buddhi. So step by step, in a sense, that looks like the essence of all scriptures. Who am I? That is the essence of all scriptures. I am Brahman, or I am Atman, I am a God. That is the essence of all the scriptures. And Shankaracharya, he says, how does a person who is already realized, a person who is already realized, a person who has attained that state of self-realization, how does he live his life? Like the Swami is giving the three qualities of the person and also leads a principled life.
So, yes.
But what is driving the person to lead a principle, like what is his state of mind or what is his state of existence? If you look at it, he says such a person gives up the upadhis. Like he doesn't associate himself with these instruments of the body, the mind, the senses and all this. And he has the self-knowledge of Brahman, and constantly, because he's contemplating on Brahman, he becomes one with Brahman. That's what he says. He says, just like in the scriptures, like because he says, a sense of all scriptures, in the scriptures, the example is given of a cockroach.
Hmm.
He says, a cockroach is constantly fearing that a Brahmara will come, a bee will come, and it will, attack it. Because it's constantly thinking, it transforms into a Brahmara. So, that is the analogy that is given. And he says, this in the Sloka 52, he says, although associated with upadhi, so that is what it is. When you say, when Swami is saying leads a principled life, it is because he is a realized soul.
Yes. Swami says, you know, once your heart is pure, you become divine actually.
Yeah. See, we are trying to now understand what is that purity.
Yes.
What is that divinity that we are talking about? Purity is when mind is absent.
Yes.
So, like from the 1990 summer showers, if you recollect, Swami has said the three defects of the mind. Mala, Vikshepa, Avarna. See, because the mala is like the dirt, like the dust, which blocks, the dust is the ignorance, which blocks the direct vision of the Atman. Mala. Then Vikshepa is like constantly shaking. It's not steady. So if the mind is constantly shaking, like a mirror which is constantly shaking, then you cannot see the reflection clearly. Avarna is like if it is covered by a dark cloth. So if there is a mirror which is covered by a dark cloth, so again you cannot see the reflection inside. So these are the three defects of the mind. Purity, Chitta Shuddhi, which Swami talks about, is making the mind absolutely still. So that purity, once you have, then you are already divinity.
Yeah.
So here in this other shloka which he says, that person who is self-realized, that person who is, how does he lead his life in daily life? He says, although he is beyond the upadhis, he uses the upadhis because he has to be associated with this body, with the mind for a daily life, you know, functioning and living. But he is not affected by their traits. He says he is like the sky. The sky looks blue at times, it looks pink at times, it looks orange, it looks different colors at times, but the sky is colorless. These are all the impurities that come and give color to the sky. It's unaltered, it is the same. He says such a person is like a dumb person who just observes everything, who observes everything, who is a witness.
Because he's just like an instrument, you know.
He says he just moves around unattached like the wind.
Wow.
So, when Swami is talking about these three qualities, that spiritually aware of the reality, essence of all the scriptures, and leads a principled life. Now, leading a principled life is not as much an effort as it comes spontaneously for them.
Yes, absolutely. If they have genuinely recognized the reality,
exactly,
of the world. Yes.
Exactly. So
absolutely,
then, you know, such people are, they just live their message.
Absolutely.
And in one context, I believe Swami said that this body, there is nobody else, no other person who is eligible to wear this saffron robe.
Yes. Hmm.
Because from top to toe, Swami said, I have no selfishness at all. Absolutely no selfishness at all in this form. So, and he said, nobody else is eligible to even give this spiritual message because I am living every message that I am giving.
Wow. Wow. I mean, Swami, while distinguishing the people who have recognized the reality from those who pretend that they are realized, you should compare them with gold and brass. And Swami says, if you put the gold into fire, the gold will only shine. Brighter,
correct.
So that is what the pure souls are. You know, whatever they have to go through, they will only glisten with added brilliance. And Swami says that is how once the human mind is subjected to the process of refinement, its effulgence does not diminish. It becomes more and more pure and more effulgent. And when you're talking about, you know, the spiritual essence of everything, you mentioned about Adi Shankara and reminded of that anecdote that Bhagwan often used to quote
right.
about Adi Shankara, how he went to Kasi with his disciples, and as he was walking along, a person of supposedly low caste
right.
Approaches him, and Adi Shankara asks this person to move away.
Correct.
Keep your distance. And the man replies, who do you want to stay away from? You want to stay away from my body? And you know, you're asking to move away, so what should move away? Is it my body? And if you're asking my body, then this body is inert, and your body also is inert, so how can one inert object ask another object to command to do something? And so similarly, he says, if you are asking, speaking to my Atma, then the Atma is in you also. The same Atma is in me. And this Atma is not only in you and me, the Atma is everywhere. So where should I move to? I'm everywhere. And, you know, this is sort of, even though this is a very short conversation, but I think, you know, the essence of spirituality is actually contained in this conversation.
Correct.
And that is a moment of realization, a moment of deep awakening for Adi Shankara, actually. And he realizes that this person who is there in front of him is not an ordinary person. It has to be Shankara himself who has come to teach me this, give me this profound truth. And that's when, of course, once he realizes that Shiva appears and blesses him and says that I assumed this form only to rid you of your narrow mentality and to give you true wisdom. And by narrow mentality here we are referring to his mentality of
Adi Shankara.
Adi Shankara's narrow mentality, where he was not able to see everything as the Atma. I mean, that is the reality that we are talking about.
See, in my understanding, what happens often with all of us, I would say,
yes,
at least definitely myself,
yes.
I would say is, you know, it's very easy to quote the Shastras.
Yes.
It's very easy to quote Swami, to
absolutely.
Quote Adi Shankara. Like I felt like a fool, you know, quoting all this.
Yes.
Atma Bodha
yes.
from Adi Shankara. It's easy to quote.
Absolutely.
It's easy to quote, but then how does it reflect in your life?
Yes.
How does it reflect in your practice? And that was a question which Dr. John Hislop again asked Swami. He said, Swami, I have heard all your discourses. I know all this. You have spoken all this. I am not this body. I am not the mind. I am the Atman. I know. So am I a realized soul? Swami said, no. That is practical knowledge.
Yeah.
So
yes.
That is bookish knowledge.
Yes.
Not practical knowledge. Bookish knowledge. He said, that is bookish knowledge. Then he said, Swami, but then why? Why we are not able to get that realization? Swami says, because you are not interested enough. See, at such a point, someone would, you know, imagine a very philosophical answer. Swami said, no, you are not interested enough. So he says, if you have interest,
yes,
if you have that steadfastness,
the intensity of interest is in these things is not there.
That's what he said. If you have that interest, how do you go about doing anything else in your life?
Yes,
you have that interest, so therefore it gets done.
Yes.
So in the same way, if you have interest, then automatically it will happen. And Swami, when he asked Swami in the year, because Swami is talking about centers.
Yes.
Centers of spiritual message and centers of following the ancient wisdom and the Atma Vidya. So Swami has set up the Sai organization. And in the year 1984, 22nd October, Dr. John Hislop has recorded that he asked Swami, Swami, 10 years are completed. Now, what is the goal for the next 10 years? What should the people in the Sai organization do in the next 10 years? should we make it into, it is a spiritual organization, should we make it into a seva organization? He asked this question and Swami said, no, it will always remain a spiritual organization. Wow. He said, it will always remain a spiritual organization, and he says, the important things is the center should not have anything to do with money.
Hmm.
See, that is something which Swami laid down very, very clear. The center should not have anything to do with money. At the same time, what is the purpose of the center? He says all the members should do sadhana to acquire purity with sacrifice.
Wow.
So he says purity, like you said, the moment you have purity, you attain divinity. Swami has also said that.
Yes.
The moment you have purity, that purity is defined by the stillness of the mind, the chitta shuddhi.
Yes.
That purity, if you have, you are already divine. Then he says, what is the sacrifice? What has to be sacrificed? And he says, ego has to be sacrificed.
Hmm.
The feeling that this is mine.
Yes.
See, the moment, why, see, these two points are very interestingly interrelated. Somebody comes and says, organization, this samiti, they are doing some charity, those blankets, everything, that is mine. I have only donated those yes. blankets
yes.
and those blankets are, so
yes.
what, then you know, that feeling of mine,
yes.
that feeling of, that has to go, ego has to go. So, you know, it is aiming at something very, very fundamental that Swami wants, that when you come to the samiti, when you come to the organization, you are attuned to the highest truth.
Yes.
It's not that you are coming there as a person who is donating something and, you know, don't get caught up in these activities, but focus on purity and sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And he says, having got that purity and sacrifice, you should have devotion to God.
Yes.
That is the purpose of the Sai organization.
It has to take people to Godward.
it has to take people Godward, not in, you know, it's like this. If we are caught up in the activity of the organization, to what end? Like Professor Venkatraman was once telling that some of the, you know, officials from the organization, they were asking Swami, in the Sai organization abroad, there is a lot of, the youngsters, they want to come, the boys and the girls, they want to serve together. It's a very common culture in the West that, you know, they come together and they serve. And Swami said, no. Swami, when they do Narayan Seva, they can they cook together? Can they serve together? Swami said, no. Then he said, Swami, if that is going to be the case, then youth come only for Seva. They come for doing Seva. And if that is the case, then they will not come for Seva. Then Swami said, so what? Mine is not a Seva organization.
Yes. It's a spiritual organization.
He said, mine is a spiritual organization which may and which does use seva as one of its means.
Yes.
Seva, bhajan, steady circle, all these are means towards the end.
Absolutely.
And he says that end is actually realization of God or going closer to God, that purity and sacrifice. But these are means.
And I mean, many times people confuse with bhajans and seva as spiritual activities, and Swami has told that, you know, these are not spiritual activities.
Yeah, in fact, going back to this 1990, see, because we are talking about purity, we are talking about karma, bhakti, marga. See, what happens? Karma, your seva, you are doing seva, that is karma marga. You are doing a lot of seva. Bhajan, singing bhajans lost in the devotion, that is bhakti marga. Jnana marga, you are having discussions, steady circles, you are having listening to talks, listening to Swami's discourses, analyzing, questioning, that is jnana marga. And Swami beautifully says, what is the purpose of these three? It goes back to those defects of the mind. He says,
yes.
That karma marga,
yes,
actually cures the mala aspect of the defect of the mind.
Hmm.
Mala is like the dirt. It is like the vasanas. It is like the traits that has been accumulated on the mind from several lifetimes. This is like the dust which has settled on the mirror, but you have to dust it off.
Hmm.
And every particle of the dust has to be removed by doing a good deed.
By doing a good deed.
By doing karma.
Yes.
So you keep doing selfless actions. One by one you are going and picking out the dust particles and removing it.
Wow.
That is mala. So you are removing the dust particles. Then vikshepa. Vikshepa, he says, is constant wavering of the mind. The mind is not at all steady. It's shaking. It's like the ripples on the river. Mm. You cannot see your reflection. Mm. It's constantly shaking. And then Swami says, Bhakti Marga calms the mind.
Wow. During bhajans, your mind is focused on Bhagwan.
It's focused on Bhagwan. So he says, clap. When you clap, your multitudes of thoughts, they fly off.
Yes.
Just like the birds that fly off from the tree.
Yes.
So he says, when you clap and you sing the Lord's name, then your mind calms down. Those the constant shaking, the vikshepa aspect, that calms down. Karma marga, bhakti marga, then he says jnana marga. What is that jnana marga? It is avarna. Avarna is like the thick cloth, black cloth. If it is covering the mirror, you cannot see your reflection. So the thick black cloth which is covering the mind is actually ignorance, ajnana. The same thing which Adi Shankaracharya spoke about.
Yes.
He says the removal of that ignorance, that ajnana, is the only way to get your darshan of the Atman, to feel connected with the Atman. So he says jnana marga. So in the Sai organization, you have karma.
So whatever we do in the karma marga, bhakti marga or jnana marga, they should lead to the cleansing of the mind.
That's the point. He says the purpose of all sadhana, the purpose of any spiritual practice is not self-realization.
Yes.
It is chitta shuddhi.
Yes.
It is purity of the mind. Because the moment your mind is pure, you are already realized.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not. In fact, there is a beautiful Zen story. So this disciple comes from another village. He comes to his master. He says, "See, master, I have gone around the villages and I have realized that I am able to speak to all of them. I am able to give them the spiritual message. I am able to convey this to them." So he says, you can go to the another village and teach. Then he asks, "Master, but how will the people respond to me in this new village?" Okay. So then the master asked, "How did they respond to you in the previous village?" Then he said, "Some of them were not interested. Some of them were totally distracted. They were totally hostile. They were not pure. They were not this thing." Then the master says, that is how the people in the next village will also be. He says, but all people are not like that. He says, see, if you are able to see defects in others, you have defects in yourself. It is not the world. It is not what you are looking at. It's not what you are changing. He says, change yourself. So, in the similar manner, the Sai organizations which Swami has started, the purpose is for self-improvement.
Yes.
And in fact, I think in the previous episode when we were referring to again this passage, very powerful passage from Swami's conversation with Dr. John Hislop, he says, who is eligible to share the spiritual message in the Sai organization? It almost comes to the same three, the three same qualities that Swami is mentioning here. Even in the Sai organization, unless you have experienced, you have experienced that this oneness, you cannot start preaching. Maybe you can share, you can discuss, you can ponder, you can inquire together. But the moment you have reached that level, then your life becomes his message.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, Swami here gives practical ways of how we can go about it.
Correct.
Swami says, you know, that holy essence has to be experienced and realized, as you mentioned. One's selfish needs have to be sacrificed.
Correct.
I mean, that is the way to, if you want to ask someone, okay, all this is wisdom, all that you've mentioned is fantastic. I mean, that is the reality of experiencing that oneness. But how do we go about it? I think the simple practical way of starting on this process is how selfless I can be. from what I was yesterday? Can I be 2 degrees more selfless today than yesterday? Can I ensure that I have little less anger than yesterday? Can I ensure that I have little less desires than the previous day? I think that is one way of evaluating ourselves on this path. So Swami says, one, selfish needs have to be sacrificed. There must be constant effort to do good to others. Constant effort to do good to others. Right. And I remember in so many discourses, Swami used to say, you know, dinam and taddinam. Swami says there are 4 ways by which you can call the dinam, as the dinam means day, as very well spent days. So right. Which are the 4 well spent days? The day when, Swami says, when true devotees gather and remember the Lord through their songs, through their music, that is one beautiful day. Or the day when you assuage the grief of the poor and treat them as your brothers, that is also a great day. Or the day when you contemplate on God and feed the people of disadvantaged class with tasty food, that is also a very good day. Or the day when great people come into your midst and they regale you with the stories of the Lord. Beautiful. That is also a great day.
Absolutely beautiful.
Swami says, these are truly the real days, and all the other days, dinam, so they are not days. Swami says, they are taddinam, means they are days of death. They are not, they don't deserve to be called as days. And in fact, Swami gives a very nice story from Shirdi Baba's life.
Okay.
So there is this wealthy person by name Wadia who lived in Nanded, and he wanted to visit Shirdi, and he sought the guidance of Dasganu, and his only sorrow in life was, even though he had everything, given that he was very rich, but he had no children.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked Dasganu, you know, I'm going to Shirdi for the first time. Please tell me how I should go, what I should do. And in the same village, there lived another, a very kind-hearted Muslim, whom people used to call Mauli Sahib. And so this person worked as a coolie, and he had a very hard and a very difficult life. And he spoke good and kind words to everyone. He should tell people to lead good lives and all that. But he was a very poor man. Many days he would not have enough food to eat also. And so there came a time when this Wadia wanted to go to Shirdi, and on the way he sees this man on the pavement, and then Wadia goes to Shirdi, and when he goes for Bhagwan's darshan, Baba's darshan, so Shirdi Baba asks him to give 5 rupees as tip, as dakshina.
Okay.
Shirdi Baba, in his usual style. And in fact, the other day I was reading very beautifully, Swami says, you know, people give dakshina to their guru. And Swami says, what is actually wanted by the guru is pradakshina. What sort of pradakshina? Pradakshina in your heart to follow his message.
Correct.
That is the, you know, you have to circumambulate your mind and your heart around the message of the guru. I mean, that is what the dakshina the guru wants. So here, Shirdi Baba is asking for 5 rupees as tip, dakshina. And so since Wadia was a rich person, so obviously he took out the money, and so he was wearing a long coat which had very big pockets. So he immediately took that money. And so even as he was giving that 5 rupees to Baba, Baba said, no, I don't need 5 rupees from you. Just give me only 1 rupee and 2 anas.
Okay.
Because you have already given 3 rupees and 14 anas.
Mm-hmm.
You have already given me. I think one rupee 16 anas in those days. So he says, you have already given me 1 rupee and 2 anas. You just give me 3 rupees and 14 anas. And this Wadia did not understand what Baba was telling. I mean, I'm seeing him for the first time, and he says that I've already given him money. I mean, what is, maybe he's getting confused, and you know, all these people. Anyway, he looks like a madcap only. So he probably is just, you know, just saying something. And anyway, you know, let me not think too much. So he just gives that money, and he says, okay, fine. All these people say he's a holy man. Anyway, I had his darshan. So he comes back. after giving the 1 rupee to Anas. And so once he comes back, Dasganu comes to meet him. And he says, oh, so you went to Shirdi, what happened? What did Baba say? He said, well, okay, I mean, you people tell that he's a great man. But actually, I'm sorry to say, but you know, he is looking like a very confused person. And you know, he's a madcap actually. Because I have not given him anything. He said that I've already given him money and all that. Maybe he got mistaken. And so Dasganu asked him, no, exactly what did Baba say? He said, no, he said, I'm giving him 5 rupees. And then he says that, you know, I've already given him 3 rupees and 14 anas. And this is the first time I'm going there. So Dasganu, who obviously was someone who always recognized the divinity of Baba. So he said, no, it cannot be. You know, if Baba has uttered something, there has to be some meaning to it. Baba is there in everyone. Don't think that he's sitting only in Shirdi. There could be some defect in you. There can be no defect in Baba. So you tell, no, you tell what happened. How did you go? What did you do? So he said, nothing. I was going in the Tanga. And, no, did you meet anything? Did you meet anyone? Did you give anything to anyone? He asked all these questions and he says, nothing. Yeah, but I remember I met that Mauli Sahib, you know, that nice man, that day. So what happened? No, I met him. I remember he was sitting on the pavement and he had not had food and everything. And so I just instructed one hotel owner there to give him some food. And I told him, I'll make the payment. So then he says, so how much did you pay? And Dasganu says, I don't know. So he immediately called his servant and he said, you go and find out, you know, how much money we paid to that hotel that day. And so when the servant came back, he said, it was 3 rupees, 14 anas. And Dasganu says, see, 3 rupees, 14 anas. You paid not to that Mauli Sahib, you paid to Baba. And Swami says, you know, you have to constantly do good. But the story does not end there. And after Wadia realizes this, you know, they go back to Shirdi again. And he falls at the feet of Baba. And in fact, even before they reach, Dasganu is already there with Baba. And, you know, they are talking about him, about Wadia, Baba and Dasganu. And so as soon as they reach there, Baba asks Wadia to give the 4 bananas that are there. He had taken for Baba a big basket of fruit this time to offer his gratitude. And then Baba asks him for 4 bananas from his basket. And he calls Wadia's wife and he gives those bananas to her. And Baba says, eat all these bananas. Don't give to anyone else. And these 4 bananas will give you 4 sons. And so that is how. Until then, Wadia had gone to so many sadhus, so many astrologers, you know, so many people who promised, and because he was a rich man, you know, everyone was giving him so many suggestions, and you know, somebody told this planet is not working, that star is not working, so many pujas, you know, a lot of people had extracted a lot of money from him, but he had no cure, I mean, no hope anywhere, and finally, he has this blessing of becoming a father. And of course, he comes to Baba again with that, with his chubby child. So, this is this here when Swami is telling, you know, you have to constantly do good to others. It is just that feeling of, can I think less about myself?
Right. And wish for the welfare of the world.
Wish for the welfare of the world, you know. Don't think of yourself less, but think less
and about with yourself. With all these feelings, you should meditate on the Lord.
You have to meditate on the Lord.
That meditation is a chapter of its own.
I know. Absolutely.
But I think, as Swami has always said, the first step to that kind of meditation is Namasmarana.
So Namasmarana,
maybe that would be a starting point.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, so that is the right path. You have to start with Namasmarana and ensure that all this Namasmarana leads to cleansing of our Antakarana.
Exactly.
If the Namasmarana is not leading to purity, as Swami says, you know, you are saying you are doing meditation, meditating on the Lord, and then if a mosquito comes and sits, then you know, you're immediately your hand goes there, and so you are meditating on the Lord or are you meditating on the mosquito? So it cannot be mosquito meditation. It has to be a meditation in toto, towards the Lord. And I think that is the way we will be on the spiritual path. That is the way we can help the world. As Swami says, you know, only when there are more and more people of this nature, we can ensure that there is more peace in the world. And only when, and such people, Swami says, not only should experience bliss in by themselves, also endeavor to share it with everyone.
Exactly.
I think that is also so important. Noble men should not just be happy that, okay, I am fine. I am in bliss. You have to share that. Bhagavan used to always say, divine love has to be shared. So, yes, we will continue this. There is so much more. And I know you take every line of this that is you can find, you take any one line of Premavani and you will find hundreds of discourses of Bhagavan which are associated with it. And that is true for everything that Bhagavan has said. So, dear listeners, do take your time off and let's ruminate on these beautiful messages of Bhagavan. And if there's one strong takeaway, we know this, but this is something that we have to constantly keep reiterating to ourselves, and which is there enshrined in Bhagavan's sannidhi, in big, bright and bold, help ever, hurt never, love all, serve all. That is the essence of all the scriptures. Here, Swami is telling, you should be familiar with the essence of all the scriptures. Essence of all the scriptures is only this. Can you all the time constantly forget yourself and always think of the welfare of the world? Can you just become so small, so small, so small that you don't exist? What exists is only Him. That is the journey, I, we, to He. That is the journey of each one of us. Thank you so much for being with us. Every time we meet, every time it's a beautiful day of learning, beautiful day of reiterating ourselves, of filling ourselves with renewed energy to walk on this path. Do share your thoughts and feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org, or if you have any questions, if you have your own thoughts which can add to this discussion, please feel free to send us your comments. You can WhatsApp us. Our number is 9393258258. Once again, 9393258258. Thank you so much. Praying to Bhagavan and expressing our deep sense of gratitude to Him for this beautiful opportunity of swimming in the bliss of His Prema Vahini. We bring this discussion to a close. Thank you so much. Sairam.